And welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today from the West End Neighborhood House, we have its Director of Development, Wes Davis. Wes, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Give us the mission statement of West End Neighborhood House.
Well, I could do that, but instead of reading the statement for you, what I'd like to do is encapsulate it in a phrase. Helping others become self-sufficient. That is what we do in a nutshell.
That's a great phrase. Who are you serving?
Well, it's a broad range, actually. We work with youth from first grade all the way through senior citizens. So it's a fairly broad and diverse range of customers. We call them customers that we serve. And we do that in a variety of different ways. We have a multifaceted approach, a comprehensive approach, you might say, to meeting the community's needs. And that takes on many forms. We help promote self-sufficiency through a number of different ways. For example, education, helping youth stay in school, stay focused on school, and keep their grades up. But not only keeping their grades up, helping them identify those particular areas of interest to them. Because we know that once we do that, once we help stoke that flame or identify that spark in them, they will be intrinsically motivated to learn more, even on their own.
So we're not cared about the grades today. We're cared about a future that this education can lead to.
Absolutely. And it's not the grades, but it's the process. It's part of that future.
So you, through seniors, you address then all walks of a family or an individual's life. How did you get started, actually? Let's go back in time, because you were founded by Emily Bissell, and she was a well-known philanthropist.
She was. Back in 1883, in fact, West End was founded by Emily Bissell, who also founded a number of other philanthropic endeavors and initiatives. But the purpose behind founding West End initially was to help keep youth out of trouble, essentially. There were a number of young people who were sort of spending time on the street loitering and were getting into trouble and were causing some problems in the neighborhood. So what she sought to do was provide a productive outlet for that energy.
So did it start out as a recreation center or just something to occupy their time, keep them off the street?
In the very beginning, it started out as the West End Athletic Club. So it was a sports program or club of sorts to help channel that energy. But it subsequently has grown into much, much more than that.
To parse it down, you identified areas where you can make a difference. And you just mentioned education. But you also work towards housing, employment, financial empowerment. You want to talk about your customers. And I've never heard anyone call them customers before. I call them clients. So where do you draw your customers from as far as what's your footprint geographic? And then what kind of income background do they have?
Well, you know, it really runs the gamut. Some of our programs are, in fact, statewide. While that is the case, we do serve a majority of our folks come from New Castle County, and more specifically from the city of Wilmington. Although, as I said, many of our programs are in fact statewide, so we don't want to limit ourselves to one geographic region per se. In terms of the diversity and the variety of economic backgrounds, we really see folks from pretty much every level. Many of the folks that we work with are or would be considered low income. It just depends on the area of interest, and it depends what area that they want to work on in particular.
Well, then let's get started with, you go from the very basic, you start with housing. Well, you know what, let's back this up. I know there are certain neighborhoods, though, that you have more concentrated programming in. And those are the areas that have the most working class, and when by working class, that's the new euphemism for working poor, which is low income. Are there certain areas that just have a deeper poverty or less opportunity in them?
There certainly are, and there are sections in particular of the city where we see that played out more obviously, you might say. We work a lot with individuals on the west side of the city, but citywide. Again, we see a concentration of folks from certain areas, but we never limit our services or limit ourselves to providing services to any one particular region.
Well, if it started in 1880s and it was called West End Neighborhood, I should have guessed that it might have begun there. But the need today is so great. And what are some of the issues that the working class are seeing? And by that, again, I'm talking about people who are one paycheck away from disaster. And is it bad to say, to use the term intergenerational poor?
We don't like to use that term, but it's an unfortunate circumstance that some families find themselves in. And a lot of that has to do with the conditions that they find themselves in.
Well, I asked you about housing, and housing is one of the ways that a family builds wealth. So if your grandparents had a house, you're probably more likely to finish school. Am I wrong here?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, Delaware ranks number 15 in the nation of the most expensive cost of housing for a two-bedroom apartment. And that severely cost burdens individuals who may be making minimum wage or just slightly more than that. I think it comes out to about 106 hours per week are required at a minimum wage salary in order to just afford a two-bedroom apartment, the average two-bedroom apartment in Delaware.
Kevin Smith from Habitat for Humanity, Newcastle County, was talking about the lack of affordable housing here. And I don't know if he said that it was 2,000. You needed 2,000 more units a week, I mean, basically, to fulfill the need for just basic housing for people.
This is true. And it's an affordability challenge. It's also a capacity challenge. And we have worked very diligently over the years to try and alleviate that pressure and to, in fact, create affordable housing opportunities for individuals who are low income.
What does capacity mean when you say it's affordability and capacity?
I should say affordability and capacity in the sense of adequate housing. There are a number of dilapidated homes, especially along the 95 corridor, mm-hmm. that while housing exists, it may not be up to code. It may need lead abatement. The housing stock may not be in a condition that's suitable or that's ideal and or safe.
Say you're losing your home. If you can barely afford what you have, getting into another place, you're looking at not just the moving costs, but you're looking at security payments have to be done and rents in advance. And talk about the whole package that you do for housing. Let's just parse down housing, employment, education, youth, community development, and financial empowerment. How does
sure.
that sound?
Perfect.
Let's start with the housing situation. What are your programs in housing?
Well, actually, before we get into that, could I clarify something?
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority, I wanted to clarify just to be clear about this, the vast majority of the folks that we serve fall in that low-income bracket. So mm-hmm. while there are some that we work with who are stable, mm-hmm. The vast majority are struggling. And that is why, in almost every case, they come to us for assistance. Now, on the topic of housing, as you mentioned, we do have one very innovative program that is in its 26th year. It's founded in 1993, in fact. And I should explain the conditions around the creation of that program a little, as a little background. At the time, organizations were receiving funds that they would then grant out to individuals to help alleviate the challenge of coming up with the funds necessary to get into a house or an apartment. Because as you mentioned, or alluded to just a few minutes ago, in many cases, individuals would be required to pay the first and last month's rent on top of a security deposit. This could amount to $3,000 or more, which very few folks have access to. So at the time, our organization and Paul Calistro, our executive director, came up with a plan among his other colleagues and cohort, and the cohort that he was a part of. He said, hey, why don't we, instead of granting the funds, why don't we create a loan program whereby we would loan individuals in need these funds at very favorable interest rates, at an affordable interest rate with a long time horizon to repay the funds, so that then once they were able to access that resource, the funds could then, once repaid, be recycled into the pool. And so you would have a revolving source of funds that would not be depleted at the outset, but that would continue to benefit or serve to the benefit of others in need.
So that's a better deal than you're ever going to find on the open market. And so you get people then into housing quicker.
This is true.
So once somebody is in there, how do you keep them in the house? Because it's easy to hand somebody the keys. How do they get to retain that home or that apartment?
Sure. Once we help individuals get into housing, that's not where the story ends. We work with them, and our ultimate goal, in alignment with our mission, is to help them become self-sufficient. So while our initial interaction with them may be to meet their basic need, whatever it may be, the ultimate goal is to partner with them and to help identify the challenges that they're facing in the ultimate effort of helping them become self-sufficient. So along the lines of the Security Deposit Loan Program, we have a assistance that we provide that helps with budgeting. So we sit down with the folks who utilize the program, and we help them evaluate their personal budget. Where are they spending the majority of their funds? What is their income? What are their expenses? And where might some adjustments be made there to help them become more sustainable? every month and in the long term as well. What are some of their long-term financial goals? And then after that initial meeting, we have a program called the Stand By Me program, which you may have heard of.
They've been on the show, actually.
Okay, great. So you're familiar. Which involves financial coaching, but it's really a one-on-one relationship with someone who is not necessarily or in any way really telling a customer what he or she should do or needs to do. They're a partner. They partner with customers and ask them, what are your goals? Now, they can help them establish specific goals, but the customer is always in the driver's seat, and they work with the coach to help them achieve their ultimate goals that they themselves identify.
Do you work with families that might be able to get financial aid in other fashions and may just not know that they qualify for things? Do you work with, special needs residents who are also in need of homes and housing?
We do. In fact, we work with some elderly individuals who are handicapped in some cases. We help them with rental housing. We actually provide a small amount of rental housing for that specific population, and we work with them to help alleviate some of the challenges they may face in that experience as well.
So your customers are, you're saying, they're really your partners. So they are investing themselves in this, and they actually have a stake in this of self-determination.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are, as I mentioned, in the case of the Stand By Me Financial Empowerment Program, they are in the driver's seat. We are there to facilitate and to help them identify and achieve those goals, and also provide accountability.
Here's where I have to say that this is Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we're talking to Wes Davis. He's the Director of Development for West End Neighborhood House, and you can find them easily enough online at westendnh.org. West End Neighborhood House, westendnh.org. And all the information about your programming can be found there, correct?
That is right. And for additional information, we can certainly provide whatever may be requested.
And when somebody goes there, that is also where they would be able to reach out to you if they are interested in providing assistance, either partnering with you or making donations, et cetera.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have a page dedicated to anyone who is interested in making a contribution. We also have some existing volunteer opportunities and descriptions of each one posted on that page of our website. But again, we are all willing and more than willing, in fact, to provide additional information and details should anyone be interested.
Well, then let's get back to your customers now. So they are in a home. They're working with Stand By Me. They're budgeting. But now, obviously, you've got to have money coming in, and education and employment opportunities fall into all of this. You have programming for both, right?
This is very true. We do. On the employment side, in fact, we have a very interesting partnership with Newcastle County's Department of Community Services. So the Department of Community Services has an ongoing summer youth employment program. But we have, in the last 3 years, including 2020, which would be next year, but in those 3 years, we are working and will be working through 2020 to help youth identify a specific career area that they're interested in, and then provide paid work experience in that area. This is thanks to support from the City Foundation, who has been just amazing and wonderful and really made this program a possibility. It's helped us to serve a number of additional youth, and in fact, by the end of 2020, we will have worked with over 400 young people.
Now, I know that you have programming for technology, instruction, working as basic as getting the GED as well, and you have occupational skills training programs. Who provides these services for you? Are they in-house, or do you partner with other organizations for these?
We partner with other organizations on so many of our programs, especially with some of the employment training. We work with... We are actually partnered with the Environmental Protection Agency, which is the funding source for our environmental jobs program. And that is a really, really interesting initiative because it combines the demand in the workplace in a high-growth industry with the supply of willing and able workers. And it makes that connection. And we've just seen tremendous results with it. Initially, several years ago when we were starting the program, we sat down with these employers and said, can you tell us where your gaps are? Where are you having trouble filling employment spots? And then we with that information, we took it to some of the educational institutions and said, are you able to provide the training that our employer partners are telling us they need applicants to have under their belt in order to qualify for these positions? And they said, yes. We formed a partnership, and the Environmental Jobs Program was born in 2015.
I mean, that's really a great idea, looking for where there are needs and then coming up with a programming to have your customers fill them. Don't you also, you do something in agriculture or in landscape?
We do, in fact. We have an urban farm. It's called the Bright Spot Urban Farm. And we work with youth every year, many of whom work over the summer on our urban farm, where they are taught horticultural and agricultural techniques, modern techniques, in fact. And they're also taught how to use machinery and equipment that is common to small-scale farms, many of which you would find today on any normally sized or small-scale farm, such as a tractor, forklift, those kinds of machines and equipment.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually very critical to their longer-term success and the skills that they will develop in order to become self-sufficient. Forklift training is a fairly well-paid certification that they can acquire fairly quickly and easily, and the hourly rate is about twice the minimum wage. So right off the bat, while they're discovering their ideal career, they can earn a living.
With the environmental and the urban farm, et cetera, is there placement afterwards? Do you help them find the jobs?
We do, in fact. With respect to the Environmental Jobs Program, we actually have relationships with the employers, many of whom helped us start the program at the outset. And they have agreed to interview and consider for hire many of our graduates. In fact, one company in particular has asked us for additional graduates. There is such a demand for them.
That's a great success story.
And the farm as well, actually, once they finish the program, we work to place them in paid internships subsequent to their participation in our paid employment program.
You do have innovative programming, right, that's been picked up by national. Other organizations are now starting to copy some of your programming.
We have. In fact, that is one of the hallmarks of our organization. It's not only addressing community needs, but it's addressing unmet community needs in innovative and creative ways. And there are a number of different examples of how we've done that over the years. I believe the specific example you're citing is the Loans Plus program, which was created as a way to address the challenge that we saw among many of our customers who were falling deeper and deeper into debt. They were getting caught up in this cycle of payday loans, title loans, where the ability to acquire the cash necessary that they needed was very easy, a very simple process. Same day, you receive your money. The only problem was if you couldn't pay the funds back in 2 weeks, you had to begin paying interest. And so the interest on a two-week loan doesn't seem very draconian necessarily, but annualized, the percentage, the APR, the percent that some of these folks were paying was in excess of 1,000%.
Oh, predators are looking for this community. And they look for it in real estate deals. They look for it in banking deals and money exchanges and employment. They're so vulnerable.
It was very unfortunate, the situation that we were seeing, because all of our folks really are hardworking, sincere, and willing to put in the work that it would take to get ahead, willing to do what they needed to do and the right way as well. And we just saw them falling further and further behind on their bills and getting deeper in debt. And we said, this can't continue. So the Loans Plus program was an alternative to payday lending. It offered the same convenience, same-day cash, but the difference was that the interest rate was capped at 9.99% annually, and the repayment period, instead of being 2 weeks, was 3 months. So it gave customers a chance to put together the funds and repay the loan monthly. It also, and this is one of the greatest benefits, is that it helped customers build their credit because it was backed by a banking institution. And so once they repaid that loan on time, it actually helped them improve their credit.
Is that a problem, finding banking opportunities for the community?
It's interesting that you say that, because you just led me to the next point, whereby sometimes not having a credit history is just as bad as having poor credit. And again, that's one of the benefits of this program, is that it not only helps customers repair their credit or improve it if it's not up to par, but it also helps them establish a credit history.
And credit history is what you need if you would like to get that house, or if you would like to, well, invest in anything.
That is so true. That is so true.
So you've got these programs. You still do youth work.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You better touch on that, because then I want to get into community development.
Well, one thing, and I like to highlight some of the more unique initiatives, and there are many, and we may run out of time, but that being said, we do have our very own track team. It's called the Above Expectations Track Team, and they are just doing tremendous, tremendous things with our youth. Now, granted, track is what draws the youth in and interests them. It's how we get them in the door, but really what we're doing is preparing them for college. And to give you an example, just this past year, our track team has visited 24 colleges and universities. And every senior for the last 4 years has gone on to college.
Oh, that's sneaky, but great. What a novel idea. Now, obviously, if they're visiting these campuses, they have to be, you know, eligible to attend. So they're high school seniors. Is there a grade requirement to participate at that particular level? And how do you get them prepped so that when they're ready to run that track meet, they realize I can attend this school?
Absolutely. Well, there's quite a process that goes into that. In fact, youth are required to maintain a certain GPA to stay on the team. So they're already motivated to keep their grades up. But above and beyond that requirement, the coaches provide SAT prep workshops, they provide tutoring. So it's not just taking them to schools, universities, and showing them, giving them a taste of what university life may be like, but it's also helping them see the steps they need to get there, the preparation they need to undertake in order to make it to that point.
How do you keep their heads on straight while they're going through all of this? Because if this might be like their one area of safety, when you're talking about teams like this, this is providing them with a lot of
It's you're right, and it's a lot more than athletics and academics. In many cases, the coaches are so much more than coaches to these kids. They are their surrogate parents in a lot of cases. They develop a trust and a rapport with the coaches whereby they see them almost as family. And the coaches go above. I can't even do the description justice when I talk about the leaps and bounds these coaches go through to make sure these kids are successful. They are there for them. They check up on them and how are you doing in school? Above and beyond the tutoring aspect of it, it's they are there to help them, and they are a dependable adult and a confidant to them.
You know what? As we're running close on time now, let's move quickly into community development, because no house stands alone. And it does take a village and a safe neighborhood and a supportive group of people to have that sense of community and to bring up great kids.
This is very true. And in fact, I personally have been blown away by the community development efforts that have been undertaken in the time that I've been at Weston Neighborhood House. For example, I can remember when I first started, there was a community survey being implemented whereby staff and others within the community went out and surveyed, knocked on doors, asked the neighbors questions about what they wanted to see, what the needs of their community were, in fact, what they felt needed to be addressed and changed in the community. This was done in the form of, as I mentioned, knocking on doors, but also through focus groups, community meetings. And all this information was compiled and discussed and boiled down into 6 or 7 key points. And so when it came time to create a community development plan, this was the basis of that entire plan. And having been around when that survey was being conducted and having seen the implementation of it now 5, 6, 7, 8 years on, it has been truly, truly incredible to see the idea and the concept germinate and go from an idea to an actual community revitalization project and a successful one at that.
Well, what are the parts that go into revitalization? What are the working pieces in this plan?
It's multifaceted. It really is. There are a number of pieces, one of which, or a few of which, we've already discussed to some degree. Youth development is one. Having opportunities for our youth to be engaged with each other, to be engaged in their community, to be committed to the success of their community through, for example, projects like park revitalizations. We've revitalized a number of parks just within the city in the last couple of years, brand new playground equipment, which may not sound like much, but every time I ride by these parks and I see 15, 20, 25 children playing every single day, despite the cold, in fact, it is so reassuring when I compare that vision to what I remembered prior to. And it's a socialization opportunity for the kids. They get to know one another. They get to know other members of the community, trusted adults. It's really a catalyst for communication. It's really a catalyst for improvement.
neighborhoods need also, though, stores, and they need business. Do you get involved in that, too?
Absolutely, absolutely. One of the initiatives was, in fact, business development. And there was a facade improvement program that was just implemented, whereby businesses, especially on the Union Street corridor, were incentivized to implement improvements to the facades of their businesses, painting and other improvements. And we've seen a number of businesses take advantage of the funding opportunity to do that. And you can see it in the before and after pictures that we've taken and we've documented. But even in the buzz surrounding the individuals who frequent these establishments and even within the community, folks who live in the community are more excited about going out, are more excited about patronizing their local businesses. So it's created a buzz in terms of interest, community interest, but also it's improved their business.
I'm going to guess that this takes a lot of feet on the ground to work. And so in our last minute, volunteer opportunities or business opportunities. If I have a business and I'd like to participate in some fashion or I'm a civic group, how do we get involved?
Well, there are a number of different areas, and I will just list a few. We do have an entrepreneurship program called the Launcher Entrepreneurship Program. We are always looking for volunteers to provide technical assistance to our budding entrepreneurs. Many times they complete the program and they get their businesses up and running, but they may have questions about marketing or how do I best advertise my services? How do I develop relationships with my customers? How do I manage certain accounting aspects of the business? Those sorts of areas that are crucial to running a small business, we could certainly use volunteer guidance and assistance in that respect.
What about the youth programming?
Oh, there's always a need for help with the youth program, for sure, for sure. Help with running coaches for the track team. In our after-school and summer camp programming, we're always in need of presenters on specific topics, but also for events, for special events as well.
So if whatever your skill, there's probably something that you can match someone up with.
We have something for everyone, you're right.
And, of course, dollars help, too.
They certainly do. They certainly do. It is a difficult operation to keep running at ideal capacity because we see so much need in the community. And we have such an amazingly talented, hardworking, and dedicated staff. They do everything they can with limited resources. And the more resources that we can put in their hands, it will not only improves the quality of the service, but it also helps us reach more youth.
And for more information, and we didn't get to touch on half of the programs and the services that are offered by West End Neighborhood House. We didn't talk about foster youth. We didn't talk about microlending. We didn't talk about any of that. So if you would like more information about anything that we did not get to today, or more in-depth information about what we did, go to their website, westendnh.org. westendnh.org for West End Neighborhood House. And my guest today has been its Director of Development, Wes Davis. Wes, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're always welcome back.
I would love to come back.
You better. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.